everyone. Before we start, I wanted to let you know, if you would like to watch our whole service, head to our website. That's dc2.me. And from the media drop-down, click sermons. You can watch our whole service there. And now, here's this week's sermon.
Good morning, Discovery Church. My name's Zach. I'm one of the pastors here. Really good to be with you. Before we get into our teaching today, just a couple quick things. Wanted to make sure y'all knew, every summer we usually have a bit of a push to try and figure out volunteers for our children's ministry throughout the summer. A lot of our typical children's ministry volunteers will go on vacation or take that summertime away, and we just find ourselves in need of a little bit of extra help. If that's something that you're like, we can help do at 2 weekends this summer, we are really in need of your help for that. Right now, there are a lot of holes, and you can actually see those holes when you walk out in the lobby. There's a sign-up board out there. And if you want to just take a look at that and see, like, are we here for some of these weeks where they need help? We would love to ask for your help, like, with that. This is also the final week in this series that we've been doing on the concept of money and this idea of right on the money. And so as we get into our teaching for today, once again, our first week, we started out with the whole of this chunk in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 6. Last week, we focused in on a little bit of a shorter chunk with Drew, and then this week, we're just into 3 verses today. So here is Matthew chapter 6, starting in verse 19. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust consume and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust consumes, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. When I was in college, it was right after my freshman year, there was a certain dollar amount that I had to hit to get back to get to have a sophomore year. And so that summer, I was like, what kind of jobs can I do? And so my typical week was I'd work for the roofing company from 4 a.m. until about 2 p.m., and then there was a 2-hour break in between 2 p.m. and 4 p.m. 4 p.m. I go work at the Omni Bank as a banquet server. On the weekends, I'd work with my dad painting houses. But trying to maximize that money, it was that 2-4 gap every day. I'm like, I can do something in there. Like, this is a 19-year-old, right? Like, I can do all kinds of stuff. And I found this, like, weird job delivering baskets for a basket company. And it was like the best job. Like, for 2 hours, usually I could fit in 2 runs. Like, that's all I had time for. But typically, it was a run to one of the local hospitals. Typically, it was somebody who was sick. Typically, it was like a big bouquet of flowers. It could be a basket just overflowing with chocolate. And it, like, anytime I walked into the room, like, it wouldn't even have to be the person I was delivering it to. Just walking down the hallways of the hospital, people would just smile. It was like the best. There's one time this old guy, his daughter had sent him this really cool basket, all this fruit stuff, kind of an edible arrangements type of a feel. And we walk in, and he just burst into tears. And it was one of those moments of just, and he's like, can I have a hug? I was like, yeah. And just walk over, and I give him a hug. And he puts his arms around me, and then he falls asleep. And it was awkward, it was kind of a weird, and he like had me. Like, you'd think like he'd just arms flop down. He like had me. And for a while, I was like, do I stay? And it just became one of those things of like, the longer I stay, the more deep into the sleep we get. I'm also working a lot of hours myself. So some of me was like, this is actually kind of nice. I might hang out for a minute with this new friend. But I loved delivering baskets. That was the best job of the summer. And today, as I just kind of live my typical life, I see delivery people all the time. And you probably do too. Amazon maybe is the most famous delivery company at this point. They've got trucks everywhere. I mean, and we're right close to this hub right here off the side of 144th, but literally everywhere you go, you see Amazon trucks. And it's like even more than that. I'll be driving through my neighborhood, and there'll just be a normal car pulled off the side of the road. And the person getting out of it is a person wearing an Amazon vest. Like, they're incognito everywhere all the time. And, like, it's Amazon. Like, they're for sure Skynet, and robots are going to take over the planet through them someday. Like, we can talk about the monopoly later. But I want you to consider something when you see delivery people, maybe particularly when you see Amazon, when you see that logo around. I want you to consider this, that Christians are God's delivery people, that Christians, it is through us that he is giving to a needy world. How do we think of money when we think of ourselves as followers of Jesus? This has been a hotly debated topic ever since the time of Jesus. There was a group right around that time, they were called the Essenes, and their whole thing is like, we're going to go hole up in some caves in the hills, we're going to be as far away from money and the systems and the community of the normal world as possible, and that's how we're going to live life, that's how we're going to practice our spirituality. And that idea of the Essenes, like, it's just not that uncommon or weird. You get into, like, the Middle Ages, you've got all of these ascetic monks and this whole monastic system. And again, this idea of we're withdrawing from the community around us. And money was a big part of that. We're trying to have as little to do with that as possible. And today, you'll still find this around. This is where we find some of our Amish brothers and sisters. This idea of, like, we're removed and we're trying to avoid some of these things as much as we can. And that's not to throw any shade. I mean, there is so much good that has come out of the Essenes and out of the monastics and out of the Amish. So I don't mean to throw any shade their way, but I would want to ask the question, is that what Jesus was up to? And I think this might be one place where it's just worth a good conversation about how do you hold money as a Christian? Is it something we should withdraw from or something we should lean into? And if maybe we expand our scope a little bit, particularly looking at the person of Jesus, I think we see a Jesus character who more often than not is leaning in to the local community around them. And he's actually commanding his followers to do the same, to be delivery people, to be engaged. It just seemed like Jesus saw every opportunity that he could to share the kingdom of heaven as an opportunity to be grasped. He didn't care who it was with. And in our modern age today, maybe even better said, our postmodern age, we consider this evangelically, that the way that we share the kingdom of heaven, this is through evangelism, it's through sharing ideas, it's through apologetics, and that's fine. That's worth some of its own conversation and holding of tension. But what about sharing the gospel as a delivery person of finances? What does that look like? Because I think the way that Jesus was setting us up as followers of him was to be people who shared our wealth, to be engaged with the world by supporting the world, to share the kingdom of heaven in financial ways. Jesus spent a lot of his time around the physically sick, and he would just help them out and heal them. He spent a lot of time around the systemically oppressed and the homeless. And I think in our modern vernacular, we would say the trafficked. He wasn't removing himself from these circles of society, but he was leaning in, and he was inviting us to be involved as well. And sometimes I think when we talk about finances in the church, we make sure to talk about the spiritual discipline of giving, which I think is really, really good. But today, I really want to focus on the spiritual discipline of making money. And I want us to see generosity not simply as a moment that occurs on the back end when you're writing a check, but that it starts long before that. So let me jump in one more time to these words of Jesus as he's sitting on this hillside teaching his students about life. How is this supposed to work? If you want to follow me, what does this look like? And he says this, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust consume and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust consumes, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Let's leave that up on the screen for a little bit here. There's some things in his original audience that they would understand right away that maybe for us are a little bit different. Home construction, for one thing, is worth considering as we hear this teaching of Jesus's. Your typical home in a typical audience of who'd he be talking to, we're talking largely bricks, maybe some mud walls, largely like a wooden, like a single panel wooden door type of a thing. Your locking mechanism, maybe a sliding piece of wood into mud. Like, this is not the most secure environment. And this is an age where the banking system that we have today, at least, like, that's nowhere to be found. So your average family, as they're hearing this teaching of Jesus, right away they go, okay, where is my treasure stored? Your average family would have a place in the floor of their home, usually like in the dirt itself, where they've dug a hole and they've literally stored their treasure in that hole. That's their savings account. I mean, it's the equivalent of we put it under the mattress. So when they're hearing this, that's what they're thinking of. And so this idea of where thieves break in and steal, right away they're like, well, that totally makes sense. And this part about where moths and rust can destroy,
Partly, this is having to do for sure with what's going on with the actual money itself. But maybe some of what Jesus is getting at here is, well, what in, even in our current day, what do moths destroy? Besides this church's stage every June. Moths destroy clothes. They destroy clothes. He's saying, don't store up yourself treasures in your clothes. Moths are just going to eat holes through that stuff. It's only a matter of time before that ends up in a Goodwill pile or gone or taken. And rust. If we're talking to a first century crowd, rust right away, I mean, they'd know what rust went after. This is an agrarian culture. When your tools got wet and when they rusted, you were in a heap of trouble. I don't know if you've ever known a craftsman who really keeps a good workshop or a farmer who is really intense about their tools, but you don't just finish a workday and throw them in the shed. They need to be cleaned. They need to be oiled. We need to prevent rust. And this was a community that understood, oh, he's talking about tools. And so as Jesus is presenting these ideas, he's saying, okay, so don't store up for yourselves treasures on earth where thieves can break in and steal the thing that's underneath your floor, or where moths can come in and they can eat the money that you've invested in your wardrobe, or rust can destroy the tools that you've built your life around. So it's kind of an all-encompassing, like when he's saying money, he's not just saying dollar bills. He's saying your wealth. I'm talking about all the things, what you invest in. And my seminary professor, who's my New Testament professor, was just the most delightful man. Let's put this up on the screen. I just want to look at his picture for a second, because he just gives me, this is Dale Bruner. This dude, he just has a cup of hot cocoa with whipped cream, and he's just so freaking pumped. He's like a three-year-old boy right now. And he was like this all the time. Like, he was just so filled with joy. But walking through this text, he said this: we want treasures because they give us security. Because of decay, moth, rust, thieves, treasures lead us to security's opposite, anxiety. Because our riches bring us into a constant war with decay, they don't bring us rest. It is a great service of Jesus, therefore, to liberate us here from anxiety about gain. Why do you pursue money and things? I do too. I mean, this is not one of those things of like, you people, like I am you people. Like, we're all in this together trying to wrestle this down. What does this look like? It's crazy when I'm focused on money, I think about what I want. But when I'm thinking about giving, I'm way more tuned in to the gratitude for what I have. I don't know if you've ever had that experience before. And I think this kind of stuff, as we're getting in, like whether you call yourself a follower of Jesus or not, like this is, I think, a human experience. This is just trying to be real here. When I have money, I find myself comforted by my place in the pecking order of society. Like, I've got enough. Like, if the bottom drops out, if we're back in a recession or depression or any of the issues, I've got something. I've got a nest egg. I can hold on to that. And particularly, as long as there's people who are beneath me, I know that if the bottom drops out, I've got a little bit more. It's like this dark thing that I think we all hold. Maybe I'm just super weird and messed up in my own thinking, but I've got something. There's security. And I find myself, when I'm giving, instead of thinking about money, I find myself thinking about how equal I am with everybody. I don't know if you've had this thought before, but I find myself thinking about how much I'd want somebody to care for me were I in a position of need. And if I were in their shoes, just how little actually separates me as somebody who has little from somebody who has much. When I'm giving, humanity seems to be a pretty level playing field. And for all the anxiety that money brings, it just seems that the whole point of what Jesus is talking about here is that he really does want to lift our heads up above and beyond our need and security for money and consider both how to be free of it and how to rightly use it. And for those checking out the claims of Jesus, this way that he's talking about, this really is for your freedom. I mean, it's for all of our freedom. This command is actually an invitation to heaven. I don't know if you caught that. But it's, you kind of know you're standing when you're invited over to somebody's house. Like, I want to be with you. I want to spend time with you. Jesus says, store for yourselves treasures in heaven. That's where I hang out. That's where I'd like to be with you. come join me in eternal life. It's your highest good. He's saying, I want you in heaven. I just want you to be with me. I want you free. And does he free you up when it comes to money? He says, don't store up things here on earth. He's not saying don't own money or possessions, or thankfully he's not saying don't own clothes. That would be fun, Jesus. Back to Genesis 1. But he's talking about where we store it. He doesn't say get rid of it. He talks about, he doesn't say don't store up treasures on earth and then just stop there. He's not condemning money. He takes this negative command, don't store up on earth, and he replaces it with a positive, but do store up treasures in heaven. Jesus does not remove desire here. He just redirects it. And rather than uproot all human ambition and passion as the Buddha taught to do, Jesus counsels us to make our ambition to be a success before the Father, to impress him, to accumulate the rewards and treasures of his notice and esteem. Jesus does not squash ambition, he elevates it. And I want to be really careful as I talk about this, that as we continue in on this teaching, I don't want this to be like, you better make God proud. Like, that's not the dynamic that we're talking about. I think we have a God here who's already looking at you going, you're my kid. Like, I made you on purpose. I've been with you your whole life. I love you. You can't make me any more proud of you than I am, but live your life in a way like that would just make me grin. It's interesting, all the things that Jesus is doing here, by not just saying money's evil, but is saying, let's be thoughtful about money. Randy Alcorn says it like this: the Christian is to be ambitious, passionate, acquisitive, enterprising for the Father's approval, for the well done at God's final judgment. Thus, Jesus' ethic is not so much ascetic, living with as little as possible, as it is athletic. I was an athlete for a time, finding myself significantly less athletic these days, but during those times, when you're an athlete, like, there's a standard that you got to meet. You're showing up at particular times to work out and to train. When you're on the field, there's particular things you're supposed to do. And when you're doing the things that your coach is inviting you to do, it's not just a success for you, but it's a success for your whole team. And when your whole team's succeeding, like, you win. And I think what I love about what Alcorn's doing here is he's saying, God's not messing around, like, He's filled with delight and joy, no question about that. But he does have a design and a purpose. And this invitation to you is not just like, hey, money, do whatever you want. Jesus is saying in a command, don't store it up here, do it here. And Alcorn's just pointing out, as an athlete, if you hear that, you go, that's the directive from coach. And I want to succeed. And I want our team to succeed. I want to pay attention to what the coach, the one who knows how to win this thing, I want to respond to that. I love that. It's less ascetic, more athletic. That ought to make us growl a little bit. Like, all right, what do I need to do? What do I get to do if this is the setup? Let's get after this. And again, it's a command. It's not a suggestion. So I think there's two questions of this teaching of Jesus that should pop out to us right away. The first is, well, what counts as storing up something in heaven? I think that's one. And the second one is, practically, how do we do that? So let's start with that first one. What counts? I'm going to be a little bit brief on this point. We've got some other sermons from years past that, man, if you're like, I want to know more about that, I would love to give those to you. Just come find me after service today. But we got to keep in mind, this is the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 6. Jesus is preaching to almost entirely a crowd of Jewish people. And when you would talk with Jewish people in the first century about giving, they just had very clear, not just like cultural concepts, but a biblical concept of what that meant. Right away, like the biggest concept, they would go to the festival of the first fruits. And if you've never heard of this before, this is, again, a largely agrarian culture. And so you're growing your food. This is your commerce. And the way that God had set things up in the book of Leviticus, which we're getting to, I know you can't wait, pins and needles everywhere. But the way he set that up is, hey, when your crops start growing, the first 10%, when that grows, this is springtime, early summer, I want you to harvest that and I want you to bring it to the temple. This was an idea of a tithe, this tithe, top 10%. And the cool thing was that there were all these then extra rules that then got placed around this particular festival of the first fruits. On your way into town, I mean, some people lived like right there, but some people would travel for days to get into town. And the rules were like, hey, if you come across somebody who's in need, like somebody who's hungry, who doesn't have enough, in this culture, the catchphrase was the alien and the orphan and the widow. Where are the immigrants and the people who are most marginalized? If you come across them and you've got like, here's the first 10% of what I've grown this year, you can give it to them. And if you run out before you get all the way to the temple, way to go. You just head back home. You don't even have to go all the way if you don't want to. Like that's the point. That's where that's going to. And if you happen to be someone who's like, I got my 10%, I'm walking it in, donkey, camel, I don't know what's going on, but you get it all the way to the temple and you haven't given anything to anyone else, the brilliance of it was that when you gave it to the temple would turn right around and go, yeah, we have people knocking on our door all the time who need help. Some of them are like the priests. Some of them are the people in need in the community. We're the clearinghouse for redistribution of wealth. That's the whole system that goes through their mind when they hear Jesus saying, give. Don't store up for yourselves treasures on earth. Store them in heaven. They're going, okay, so giving is still a part of this kingdom of heaven that this Jesus character is talking about. And on top of that, there were a variety of other titles for giving. They have love offerings, goodwill offerings, all these different things of like, I think it was largely to prevent people from getting stingy and going, I gave my 10%, I'm done. But say, no, how much, like, you want to do more? Generosity is like super fun. Just want to continue to give. Lots of ways to do that. But generally, the idea was, one, you're not keeping this money for yourself. Two, it's going to do justice in the world around you. And three, part of that justice work, and this one's, I think, really fun and hard for us as Westerners, individualistic Westerners, to really wrap our heads around. But the third part is a collective participation in a community of worship where the community was being approached for help all the time. So, who are we talking about when we're saying care for the poor and the needy, the orphan and the widow, the hurting and the marginalized? Man, whether you've been following Jesus for a long time, you're like, I'm new to this whole Christian thing. I don't think I have to do a ton of work to help us understand the world's a pretty messed up place. And there's a lot of places to give. There are chances to put back right so many things that are broken. What pulls on your heartstrings? What are the places where your heart just breaks for what goes on in the world? Maybe it is like it's just people who are hungry. I just don't think food should be a problem. At this day and age, with all the things that we have, why are people hungry? I want to engage with that in the world. About physical sickness, causes of cancer research or hospitals, is there something being set right in offering to help there? What about the foster system and adoptive care? What about immigration reform? What about supporting teen moms or those who are struggling to find a job? What tugs at your heart? I mean, it is a myriad of options. And so if that's the poor and the needy, like the folks who it's like, this is not some, I had one person say like, hey, if I just leave all my money to my kids because I'm pretty sure they're going to need something someday, does that count as giving? And I'm like, I don't know, you can take that up with the Lord. It sounds weird to me. I don't know. I do know that things on that kind of a list, like, yeah, I think so. I think that's what he's after. And where do you give it and how? There's so many good causes, y'all. You'll find them. I would just so encourage you, find ones that are Christ-centered as you go, as best you can. And when it comes to this idea, this concept of giving to the temple, I think things get weird sometimes as Christians when we read the Old Testament because we go, temple, church, they're the same. They're not the same. Like, there's something really distinct about how the church, as we get into the book of Acts, it just starts breaking into all these smaller and smaller and smaller communities. The temple was one thing. It was in Jerusalem. It's still there, but that was like, there was such particular things about how that system worked that I think if we're honest, we just go, those rules, they don't necessarily apply the same way today. So while we don't have a temple, I would say you do have a local church. How does that work? It just seems to me that there's a shred of goodness in the idea of saying, I want to give with a community of givers. And that collectively, as we all care for the local community, we as a group, as a family, we're helping the families around us. There's a good to that. So do you want to store up treasures in heaven? I think with this Jewish mindset of how they would think about giving, I would encourage you with this. Give to needs in the world on your way to church. If you've got nothing by the time you get to church, great work. But man, if you've got some or most or all of it, giving it to the community of the church to be redistributed to those who come knocking, that's cool. Second question, how should we give? And I don't mean here like, are we talking cash or check? Like, that's not the idea. I'm talking about the strategy about it. And this is kind of the core of what I hope to get into today. I'm talking about the athletic, not ascetic part today. Because most of the time when we talk about giving in church, we're talking about the back end of generosity, the writing of the check. But I wanted to offer something different. I wanted to talk about the front end. I grew up in a family that didn't have a lot of excess. My dad was a middle school teacher. My mom was a nurse. So I didn't have a lot of money. And pretty shortly out of college, I was a local missionary working with Young Life raising money. And it was wild to me as I fundraised. And as I started rubbing shoulders with people who either they in their own life or through their family, they just were surrounded by wealth. So many things blew my mind by these incredibly generous people. First off, they were people who were smart. They spent their life chasing a calling to make money and maximize their God-given abilities. And when they heard Jesus say, give, they were smart enough not only to say, where do I give? They were smart enough to say, when do I give? Many of the people who I've met over the years who are the most generous are people who understood how to maximize their money. Not afraid at all to give money today, but they knew that a smart investment could help them turn a dollar into $10 2 years from now, and they could do more. And then they would do it. And the fact is, as they've multiplied their money, they're not only radically generous, but their strategy continues to grow as their money grows. And they just, I just found so many people who would be writing big checks, but were also asking themselves questions like, how can I make more so I can give away more? Because I love being generous. This is the idea of the front end of generosity. It is too small-minded when we read the Gospels to just say, give money, and to think that we're talking about this moment in this day. It's much larger to consider, what do I have? And then how can I maximize this? Jesus told a story that some of you may be familiar with, but it's a parable about this master who gives money to three of his servants. One of them he gives 10 pieces of money, one 5 and one 1. And each of them invested a little bit differently, but the one who he gave the most to takes the most risk but ends up having a pretty good return on investment. And when the master returns from this journey he was on, he says, man, well done. In fact, because I could trust you with a little bit, I'm going to trust you with a lot. Let me give you even more than I gave you in the first place. And then he has this wild line in this parable, enter into the joy of your master. He gets to the servant who he'd given the littlest amount of money to, and that servant just kind of freaked out. Like, I don't want to screw this up. I'm just going to bury it, which here and that, like somebody's floor. I'm just going to put this in my floor. And when he gets back, I'm just going to give him back exactly what he gave me. And the master's like, you wicked, lazy servant. You could have at least put it in a savings account and earned a little bit of interest, but you didn't even do that. I'm going to take from you the little that I gave you. And Jesus in this parable, I just want to be clear. I don't think he's talking precisely about money. I think he's talking about your whole life. But I do feel strongly that one of the things he does insinuate in there is that includes your finances. Are you multiplying what's been given to you? This is the work of a good servant. So whether it's much or little, what do you have? How do you see it as something that has been entrusted to you to grow? Be smart about it. Be athletic about it. Be a delivery person of it. If you just gave away everything you had today, you'd have nothing left. There's a tension here. The tension is that we don't just go, I'll keep some. That way I can feel a little bit secure and better, some control about my world. I mean, this whole talk, the idea of like hanging on to wealth, of growing it, this is like encouraging you to keep a pet lion around your house. Like, the longer that it's there, especially the bigger that it gets, the more this thing has the possibility of shredding you in half. Like any pet, it's something that you've got to train every single day. You cannot take your eyes off the prize or one day it will maul you. But it also has the propensity, unlike a lion, maybe more like a golden retriever, that with some good work, someday it obeys your commands and it brings you great delight and joy. So be careful if this is a way that you choose to follow Jesus. Do not take your eyes off of the damage that this can do to you. But man, keep chasing the good of what it means to be somebody who's maximizing what you've been given. So how do you store up treasures in heaven? For sure, give to the need in the world. It's good to be generous on the back end. But also, the whole point of today, as we're talking about just a good theology of money, consider how you're being generous on the front end. What do you have that can be grown? Are you doing it so that someday, when you give it away, it will be your best work? So how do we deliver? Everywhere I go, I see Amazon people. Everywhere I go, I see Christians, whether I can tell it from a glance or not. You are God's delivery people. You are the way that He gives to a needy world. How do we do this? Man, here's one. Get serious about debt. This maybe comes in through a back door, but for some of us, this is a crippling topic. And I just want to say, man, if you're buried in it, I know that this is hard. Probably these last 3 weeks of messages have been so brutal because you're hearing it, and I'm sure your heart is like, I'd love to give. I just can't. And I think this may be a step for you where you just go, I got to have time to really buckle down on my debt so that I can get to this point. Do you know that the average American, just looking up stuff this week, will pay over $164,000 in interest, just interest, over their lifetime? That breaks down to a tick over $2,000 a year. Discovery Church, we're roughly about 1,000 people that call Discovery home. If we had 1,000 people giving $2,000 extra a year, that would be $2 million a year that we would have that we'd be able to give away. That's just interest that we're all paying. Wild. And I want to be clear. Like, I don't want to be stupid. I am not a great financial brain. I know that there's good reasons to have a mortgage and all that kind of stuff. So I just want to be thoughtful about that. But man, as a first step, how do we deliver? Kick debt out of your life as soon as you can. Second thing is this. Call your financial planner or get one. Don't ignore money or be lazy about it. Consider what can be invested so that you can someday give it away. If you're like, I don't even know where to start with a financial planner, those of you in life groups, it's one of your questions this week. Share your best financial people with each other. Who is doing really good work out there? How do you be a delivery person? I love this one, the Solomon Foundation. Some of you have heard of this group before, but they're actually the mortgage lender who helped us build this church. And their whole thing is all we do is build churches. But what they do is they take private investments from individuals and they'll use the capital as they're continuing to grow their investment portfolio to then be able to lend money to build more churches. Wild. Like, it's so cool. What about setting up an account with the Solomon Foundation? What about legacy giving? Some of you have heard about this, but this is setting up, and it doesn't matter how old you are. This is not like, I'll do that when I'm 80. Starting today, how much money do I want to give away when I die? Is that something like just pass it all down to the kids or redistribute it out to the family, or is that something you go, I want to be really thoughtful about how that money goes? And then finally, and I think this is the main event, what about the poor and the hurting? How do we give money to these folks in our community? There's lots of issues with just giving cash to somebody on the street, and I think there's really good tension that we should all wrestle with as far as how we creatively help people like that. I think for me, I can say for my neighborhood, I think I can safely say this for most of us, rarely does somebody just knock on my door and ask for a handout. I don't know of 8 years at living at our current house if anyone's ever done that. But at this church, since I've worked here, rarely does a week go by where somebody doesn't knock on our door physically. Never does a week go by where our phone line doesn't get blown up. People are here all the time. And they're always asking us for money. And when I say us, I do not mean the staff. When I say they're asking us for money, they are asking Discovery Church. I mean us. Some of us in this room are people who either have or are currently knocking, and I just want to say to you, I'm so pumped that you're part of this community. I'm so glad that you're here. But this physical place, thank God that we have this, It serves as the physical door to the poor and the needy so that they have a place to come and knock. So if you're wondering, how do I give to the needy? I would just invite you, stay here unless God calls you away, and plan to faithfully be a part of what God is doing here with your finances. Share the gospel with us, not just in evangelism and apologetics, but with our finances together. If for nothing else, it helps your eternal investment grow. Some of you know, like you've heard rumors that we have a benevolence ministry around here. I think this is probably, and unfortunately, the best kept secret that we have, but it's a story that we've been wanting to tell a little bit better. So if you've been giving to Discovery or if you've been considering it, I just want you to know, one of the places where your money goes is just a built-in part of our budget is to our benevolence ministry, and I wanted you to hear about it from some of them. So check this out.
What got me started working with the team are knowing some people that, you know, well-educated, had some things happen, and they were in the situation.
I think we're all just one step away from being one of these people who really, really needs help.
We try to start off with, we want to help you so that people don't feel like they have to find the magic words for us to say yes. I think we're all just trying to grasp at people and trying to pull them back before it gets just almost impossible.
Our team during the month does calls in 15-day-ish blocks. So 2 people will be on the first half of the month, 2 people the second half of the month. And we try to help people with about a 7-mile radius around our church. There's just so much need out there. That's one way that we can really focus on the community that's right around Discovery.
We get phone calls, they go directly to message so that we can have a chance to pray about it before we pick up the phone and call people back. And so after you take a phone call and you talk to the person initially, then you're going to invite what we're calling our second, the person who's on call with us, for another call. And we just call back and say, I know you just shared your story, but could you share it again with my partner here just so he can listen and discern, you know, some things that I might not have heard, so we can just offer the best that we can. And then after that, then we get together and talk through, what did you hear? What did you think? How do you think we should go forward? And then we'll reach out to our team.
I've really been amazed at is the amount of discussion that happens with every decision, with everyone who calls and asks. And it comes from a place of love and concern and wanting to help.
As we start to pray about the situation, we're saying, I'm going to take my opinions. I'm going to lay that on the table. I'm not going to judge the situation. I'm going to let God speak to me.
I don't know what I thought before I joined, but I've been surprised at the volume of how much need there is. Even if we can't necessarily help or help to the level that we need, that they're asking for, to know that somebody cares about them and is praying for them.
Yeah, especially someone going through something really hard. They lost a family member, a really sick kid, whatever that is. Do you have support around you? And then we always offer, you're welcome to join our community. So wherever their comfort level is, we try to provide that. I think that just gives dignity to the people that are calling for help.
I'm encouraged by the fact that, you know, their will is strong, and they continue to find different things that I wouldn't have thought of.
It's really hard to know that there's a lot of people out there who are really struggling and are cold and hungry and scared.
And we couldn't do it if the congregation of Discovery didn't, give. That's where our money comes from.
Over the year, Discovery, so our congregation's tithing money that we're putting toward benevolence, is over $40,000 a year.
It represents Discovery because one of your key themes is, you know, it doesn't matter what you've done or what's been done to you.
That's my heart. I love this so much. It does keep me up at night, but it's so worth it. And I'm so grateful to have a strong team who feel it and love it and sacrifice for it.
If your neighborhood's like mine, You might not get that many people knocking on that door, but on this door that is also yours, people are knocking all the time. So as we wrap up this sermon and as we wrap up this sermon series, I just have one final ask as somebody who is, closer maybe to some of these folks and the benevolence team. These folks are such heroes, the work that they do. But my ask is this. If you're thinking like, hey, I could do like $5, I'd humbly ask you to join us in what we're doing. Would you consider making a monthly gift? Here's the quick and dirty on Discovery's budget. Our budget is about $160,000 every month. Our typical income hangs out right around $130,000 a month. November, it was $92,000, which is like, whoa, that's wild. These last couple months, it's been around 120s. Each month, we typically have about 130 homes that are monthly givers. That adds up to about $60,000 every month that we count on. And with about 1,000 people that call Discovery Home and doing weird fundraiser person math, that's 500 homes, roughly, single people. I see you. I don't mean to miss you in that. But if everyone would be giving at a monthly gift, that would be 370 more homes that would be giving right now to Discovery. That would triple the number of monthly givers right now. And so as we finish, that's just my ask. Would you consider giving a monthly gift here? And again, even if it's $5, I just think it puts you in community with people who are giving. It allows you to be a part of these stories with folks who are knocking on your door and my door here. And it also just helps us as a church to be able to count on our income a little bit better so that we know month in and month out how much more can we continue to give. So for those who are able, I'd invite you to give in that kind of a way. For all of us who are able to stand, I'd invite you to offer in one final way something to the Lord. And that's just simply your worship and your voice. And so for those who are able, let's stand and let's sing together.